Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 762. It's the 20th of April, 2017. On the podcast today, Graham Lumsden, CEO of Motif Bio, that's MTFB, and Graham explains the positive data readout for the phase 3 trial of its lead drug, Iclaprim. Also on the podcast, I have Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments, that's ENGI, and Dominic talks about the completed sale at Kingswood and the Wellingborough portfolio disposal process. Also comments on the progress they're making on the acquisition front. Plus, James Phillips, Group Head of Regulatory Strategy at Lombard Risk Management, that's LRM, and this is off the back of a very positive trading update a couple of days ago, and James explains their strengths in the current and future a regulatory environment. I also have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Bushveld Minerals, that's BMN ticker, plus Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Cadence, Crawshaw Group, and Acacia Mining. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, a very popular stock at number one, and also top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the same company is the most followed in the last 24 hours and have two of the top most liked RNSs. Oh, I bet you can't wait to hear what it is. Ooh.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Graham Lumsden, Chief Executive Officer of Motif Bio, MTFB. Graham, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome, Justin. Good to talk.
Yeah, and it's off the back of some very positive news you released the other day, and we'll get to that in a bit. And there are more people, you know, knowing and finding out about your story. But for people not quite aware of what you're about, Graham, could you, you know, give us a brief summary of what is Motif Bio all about, please?
Yes, so Motif Bio is a company listed both on the AIM in London and on the NASDAQ exchange in New York, focused on the development of novel antibiotics which are designed to treat serious and life-threatening infections in hospitalized patients. These infections are more and more being caused by what's called multi-drug resistant bacteria, otherwise known as superbugs. And we're running out of antibiotics that are actually working against some of these nasty infections. And at Motif Bio, we have a new antibiotic that's called Iclaprim that has a very different and underutilized mechanism of action. So if the bacteria causing these infections are not responding to currently available antibiotics, because Iclaprim works in a very different way, it can be effective against these superbugs or multi-drug resistant bacteria.
Excellent. Well, listen, the RNS got a lot of likes on Vox Markets was the announcement of positive results for Iclaprim in Revive 1 Phase 3 study. So this is good news because we've been trialing this, saying, you know, data is going to come out sooner or later, and it's come out and it's had a positive effect. So take us through, Graham. What does it mean? There's a lot of sort of technical detail in the RNS, but for the layman, what does this mean?
Yeah, so let's just step back for a second. Motif Bio is 2 years old as a public company, and just March of last year was when we announced that we'd started enrolling patients into two clinical trials. They're called phase three clinical trials. Phase one is generally a small study in healthy volunteers to check that a new pharmaceutical is safe. Phase two is a slightly larger trial in patients to continue to check for safety, but to start to look at efficacy. And then phase three, which is what we announced yesterday, is the final stage in clinical testing, where you have a large number of patients to make sure that you can demonstrate safety and efficacy. And it's the phase three trial or trials that are required by the regulators. So the European Medicines Agency in Europe and the Food and Drug Administration in the US require well-controlled phase three trials in order to submit for approval to market a new pharmaceutical. So what we announced yesterday was the first of our two phase three trials, also known as pivotal trials, because they're pivotal in order to allow us to submit the data and seek approval to market. And the great news is that the two endpoints that we had to demonstrate in terms of showing that Iclaprim works, it kills bacteria, and it helps patients to get better who are infected with these nasty bugs, we met the two desired endpoints. One is called an early clinical response. This is where patients who have these nasty infections on their skin have at least a 20% reduction in the size of the skin lesion 48 to 72 hours after starting an antibiotic. So a very quick response is what the FDA is looking to see with a novel antibiotic like Iclaprim. So Iclaprim demonstrated early clinical response. It reduced these nasty skin lesions by at least 20% at 48 to 72 hours. The second piece that we announced was what's called test of cure. So after a patient has completed the course of antibiotics, which can be anywhere from 5 to 14 days, then a further 7 to 14 days after that, a measurement of test of cure. So did the patient get better or did the patient not get better, needed further antibiotics or some other outcome? And at that second endpoint, clinical cure, Iclaprim also met the requirements, and that was what was in our press release yesterday. So we met the endpoints, we demonstrated that Iclaprim works in patients with acute bacterial skin and skin structure infections. These are skin infections with a minimum size of 75 square centimeters, about the size of an iPhone, and they include deep abscesses, infected surgical wounds, and something else called cellulitis. So we've demonstrated in a large phase three trial that Iclaprim is effective. So that was great news, and we were really pleased to put out the press release yesterday.
Excellent. And so you must be pleased with this. Does it exceed what you thought, or just about, you know, what you thought would happen? And also, what's next, Graham?
Yes, I mean, we were pleased to see the results. We were expecting results like this because we have taken the opportunity to optimize the dose of Iclaprim that was used in our trials. We have a lot of history, a lot of data from Iclaprim. It's actually been used in over 1,000 patients and healthy volunteers now. And so we know a lot about the safety and efficacy profile of Iclaprim anyway. And we were able to optimize the dose and improve the efficacy and safety profile. And so we were hoping, but we thought we had a really good chance of being able to show the great data that we announced yesterday. I think the only surprising piece was we just didn't see anything that was worthy of reporting in terms of side effects. So that's a great thing. Yeah. You know, most trials with new pharmaceuticals, there's going to be some sort of side effects to report. In this case, the data that we reported yesterday, the side effects were almost all mild and just not clinically relevant. And we were very pleased to see that. So Iclaprim seemed to have a really good safety profile in the trial that we announced yesterday. So what's next? The FDA and the European regulator, EMA, has asked us to do two of these well-controlled trials. So the second trial, which is identical to the one that we just announced yesterday, so the results from the second one should be very similar to what we announced for the first one yesterday. Our second trial is well underway, and we expect to be able to do a press release just like we did yesterday for the second trial in the second half of this year. And we're on track. Patients are coming into our second trial. We're well through the enrollment period. And so you'll see an announcement likely sometime over the summer that we've completed enrollment. And then we expect data readout in the second half of this year.
Yeah, and the stock, you know, price had a nice rise on that announcement, and it's settled down a bit here. But this means now where you're at. I mean, you know, we've often said, you know, we've compared you to peers who are at similar stages here now. You're still sort of, because, you know, it hasn't gone crazy, the stock price. So you're still, if you look at peers, you know, pretty much undervalued here, do you think?
We think so, yeah, but that's an opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and so what will we be having? Because it's a big gap now between now and the next bit of data. So will there be any more updates regarding, you know, Motif Bio in the meantime?
Yes, there's a number of other things that we're working on in the background, and they're not for disclosure right now, but there's going to be some really interesting news flow we expect over the next weeks to months. There's a major scientific conference that takes place in October of this year in San Diego. It's called ID Week. ID stands for Infectious Diseases. And we are submitting a number of what's called abstracts, so summaries of our scientific data with Iclaprim, which we hope will be accepted for presentation at ID Week, so we're hoping to have a strong presence there. We will be in attendance at a conference called ECCMID, which takes place in Vienna this weekend. So a number of scientific events continuing to bring Iclaprim in front of the important infectious disease physicians around the world. And yes, some additional things that we've been working on over the last several months that we hope to be able to announce in the not too distant future. So lots of work. The team's been really, really busy and continues to be very busy to build additional value into our clinical development programs.
Excellent. And just to reiterate, Graham, if this gets to commercialization, and you know, what is the potential market here?
Yeah, well, let me say two things. So first of all, the timeline. By announcing our phase 3 results from Revive 1 yesterday, mm-hmm. we're absolutely on track to be able to submit what's called an NDA, which stands for New Drug Application. Mm-hmm. That would go into the FDA in the US in the first half of next year. Closely followed by an MAA, which stands for Marketing Authorization Application, which goes into the European Medicines Agency, also in the first half of next year. Mm-hmm. And that would enable a decision from the FDA, most likely before the end of 2018. So we're looking for a decision, of course, hopefully an approval, before the end of next year. So this is a very late stage biotech investment opportunity.
Yeah.
Assuming we get an approval, there are several antibiotics used in the hospital setting in the last few years that have had peak year revenues of more than $1 billion. And we've basically looked very closely at how they achieved that. And there are some very important lessons to learn, which, of course, we intend to put into place at Motif Bio to make sure that Iclaprim can be valuable for patients as well as physicians and our shareholders.
Yeah. Okay. So it's, but it's going well. I mean, let's say there aren't many companies you can look at this level as de-risked as you are there around? I mean, like I said, you know, looking at your peers, they are multiples of where you're at. So to me, it seems you are significantly de-risked at this stage in your journey. Isn't that the case?
We would agree. We are focusing on doing a great job within the team here at Motif Bio. We demonstrated that again, I think, yesterday, mm-hmm. Being able to complete our first phase 3 trial 7 months early with great data. That's another demonstration that we have a fantastic team here at Motif Bio. So we're focusing on the things that we can control. And let's expect that everything else that's outside of our control looks after itself and comes right over the next weeks to months.
Yeah, hopefully. Okay, Graham. Well, listen, if anyone's listening right now, they think this is an opportunity right here, and they're not following Motif Bio or the story, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yes, reason number one, superbugs. We read about it in the media all the time. Bugs developing resistance to currently available antibiotics. At Motif Bio, we have a new antibiotic. We just demonstrated yesterday that it works and it has a great safety profile. So people who are interested in investing in the antibiotic space, Motif Bio, that would be the first reason. Second reason, we announced positive phase 3 data yesterday. There's not many companies around that can say that. There's a lot of earlier stage companies. We have our first phase 3 trial looking really, really good. The second trial is identical to the first trial, and that's expected to read out later this year. And then the third reason is commercial opportunity starting as early as beginning of 2019 and several other antibiotics used in the hospital setting, which is where Iclaprim will be used, with peak year revenues of over $1 billion. So highly attractive commercial opportunity. Those would be the three reasons I would suggest.
Excellent, Graham. The story is getting more exciting every time we talk, and I look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much, Graham.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments at ENGI Ticker. Dominic, thanks for joining me again.
Hi, Justin. Great to speak to you again. Looking forward to an update.
Yeah, well, listen, before we get into what you're doing and how busy you've been, just remind people what Energizer Investments is all about, please, Dominic.
Of course, yeah. Energizer is an AIM-listed investment company, whereby our main strategic focus is investing in operating companies that have an underlying real estate, an underlying property portfolio. For example, service apartment companies, for example, self-storage companies. And we end up... In those situations, we end up owning the tenant, and we end up owning and or controlling the underlying property portfolio as well. And we like those type of investments because we can create shareholder value in two different ways rather than one. So we can grow the value of the tenant that we own by increasing its revenue, and we can grow the value of the underlying assets as well. And also because we can scale them pretty easily, we can apply a lot of technology to those types of investments to get scale, to grow the operations, and we don't necessarily need a lot of capital to do it because of the technology, and because we don't have to always own the underlying property. We can also rent property and put our operations into them.
Yeah, well, I think I picked up on a new idea you had there. Listen, we spoke about 2 months ago, so you know, what have you done since then, and what's happening? What's the progress you've made?
Great, no problem. Yeah, so we've had a general meeting, which you'd have seen in the RNSs. We raised successfully £1.255 million in December, and because we're working hard on a number of different acquisitions, we wanted the ability to be able to step in and raise more capital to buy or to buy the next acquisition or fund the next company. So we had a great general meeting, overwhelming positive response from shareholders about what we're trying to do, our strategy. And of course, you'll have seen they've approved allowing us to raise more money to do these next up-and-coming potential acquisitions. We've also been busy on the sales side. We're reshaping the portfolio. So you'll have noticed that in Kingwood in Surrey, we had a 12 residential units development funding program, which we've just finished, and the last unit has been sold successfully. So that's closed off, which is brilliant. The money returning to Energize will be used to strengthen the balance sheet, again, ready for the next acquisition. And in Wellingborough, in Northamptonshire, we reported recently, which is a £2.9 million portfolio of 20 residential units, and reported that we're looking at marketing those assets. And we've actually got two or three parties already who are proactively coming to us wanting to get into negotiations and look at buying those assets from us. So by selling, should we sell all of those, we would add significantly to the cash position of the business, which is already good given that we already raised money in December. So all of that, moving the business towards getting into and closing the next acquisition.
Yeah, cool. So your strategy now of acquiring, now it's serviced sort of apartments and place, and you also mentioned storage there, didn't you?
I did mention storage, yes. So you're right, it's self-storage, and we've been in negotiation, I mentioned last time, for a few months with one specific business, which we are still talking to. We've also decided to talk to a couple of other businesses to get into the sector to make sure that in all scenarios we end up acquiring a business in the near future. But I have just mentioned self-storage as well. That's another great operational real estate sector, but we're not looking to compete with the big guys who are already out there with their large units on edges of towns, which you've seen, people like Big Yellow and SafeStore. Mm-hmm. We're actually looking at an interesting new part of the category, which is called micro storage. Mm-hmm. Which is urban self-storage. So it's self-storage units within cities. So it's doing things like taking over basements of large buildings and fitting them out with smaller self-storage units, which is fully in the cloud, fully digitized, so there's no staff there. using a lot of technology whereby people can walk from their houses and use these units rather than have to drive to the edges of towns to use larger units. So it's a very buzzy new sector within the self-storage sector. A lot of interest from customers, potential customers, and a lot of interest from different investors who want to partner with us on that. So that's another area. That's the second area we're looking at in terms of new investments for Energizer.
Yeah, and I understand you obviously can't say too much, and it's hard to say where you are. So you're chatting with lots of different parties here. But like I said, whenever you're doing negotiations, nobody knows how long they're going to last for. But what is your time frame here? Can you put a time frame on these acquisitions or not?
Yeah, well, it's difficult because you're dealing with a third party always. So we're very keen to get these one of these closed as quickly as possible. We want to put the capital that we have raised to work as quickly as possible. But when we are dealing with a third party, you're always subject to a little bit to their speed, however much you push them. But in terms of timing, we really want to get in the next 3 months one of these transactions closed, absolutely. I believe there'll be something will be done quicker than that, because within the micro, in particular, storage area, that is a little bit more within our control. And as I might have mentioned, it's a new area. There aren't many businesses out there to go and buy, so we may actually end up joint venturing and building a business together with someone who we're already having a discussion with. So that could well be something that's quicker, and you could see an announcement sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and like you said, they're pretty much automated, so there's, low running costs, but is there potential to earn good money there?
Yeah, absolutely. Great margins, because you're renting spaces or buying or owning spaces which are not that useful for other things. So take, for example, in London, take a basement of a large building that has no windows or any light to it. That's not particularly useful. These spaces have started to be used by some of the gym companies, and some gym companies have expanded across London and other urban areas in the UK. They are cheaper to rent, and you get good margins on your self-storage business in those spaces, because the customers, there's high demand from the customers. And like you said, there's low staff costs because it's fully automated. So they're digitized on the way in. You don't need staff in them. They're all remote control from a central base. So you've got low running costs.
Yeah. And you would go in and develop that space. So you rent the space and you do development yourself, would you?
Yeah, you fit out. So we would be in that scenario, we'd be partnering with an existing, very experienced operator who's been very successful in the industry in the UK for a number of years. So they know the ins and outs of how to fit out the most efficiently as possible these spaces. Clearly, you want to eke out every square meter possible, because every square meter is a rentable piece of space. So, and that all adds to your margin. So you get the best fit out, the best layout in these spaces. You rent the spaces for the lowest rent possible. You have the lowest possible running costs. And you have them in locations where there is the highest urban density of housing, so there's the highest need for these type of spaces, for example, in London or other large cities where people have very small houses because they're so expensive to have, and very small amounts of storage space. So you get you get good prices on selling the units to customers, and then you get great margins.
Yeah, okay. Well, Dominic, if anyone's listening right now, and they like the sound of where you're headed here, but they're not following you, can you give us three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Definitely, yeah. So we're a very good team. I've mentioned before, myself has come from a background of real estate investing and operating company investing for a number of years, as have the other two board members, having raised money and run listed businesses before. So a very good team. We're all totally aligned with the shareholders. So we put money into the business, and we will be putting more money into the business as we go forward and raise more capital for doing the next acquisitions. We've got a great strategy of combining high technology with property operating companies to build scalable businesses. And as I've said, we're very well funded. We have raised money back in December. We will have cash being returned to the business because of the sale of the Kingswood assets that I mentioned earlier, and because of the potential sale of the Wellingborough properties. So we're well capitalized, and because it's the start of the acquisition program, we're at the beginning of the journey. We've got a lot of interesting things to do, and we believe that something's going to happen in the next few months, which is going to be interesting for everybody.
Marvellous, Dominic, good to chat to you, and look forward to speaking again soon. Maybe off the back of some news. We never know. Acquisition news. We never know.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
That is the target.
Excellent. Thanks, Dominic.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Phillips, Group Head of Regulatory Strategy at Lombard Risk Management, LRM ticker. James, thanks for joining me.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all right. Well, listen, you've had a trading update recently that's really buoyed the market. The market took it very well to it. And I'll just go through that, because I know that's not part of what you're here to talk about today, but you're expecting end-of-year revenues between 34 and 34.4 million. Also, a company expects to report a year-end net cash balance of 7 million and adjusted EBITDA in the region of 2.4 to 2.8 million, significantly better than market expectations. That's why the share price rose yesterday. But I've got to explain this two sort of sections to LRM, and that's collateral management and regulatory reporting. Now, James, you're over the regulatory reporting side, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
And and what mix of the business is that, percentage terms?
It's about half. It's about half.
Okay. Well, can you explain what that means? Of, you know, what are the strengths in this area and what it means, essentially, a brief overview of regulatory reporting?
Sure, yeah. Well, banks are obliged to provide regulatory reporting to regulators. It's a part of their process of paying the rent. And it's been a core business for us for many, many years now. So 20-something years or so, and being a market leader in this space, in fact, in a number of our markets for many of those years. So it's a fundamental piece of what we do. It's a fundamental part of what banks have to do. And going forwards, that isn't changing.
I see. And I suppose this was tightened up over the financial crisis, was it? When all banks started going through and getting bailouts, was the regulatory environment tightened then?
Absolutely right. I think one of the key things that has actually driven ongoing growth in our market sector here has been the response to the crisis, of course. And there have been a sequence of changes around capital, liquidity, leverage, and so on. Other styles of reporting piled in under this thing called Basel III, which you've probably heard of. I mean, those changes have been incremental all the way, have significantly challenged firms' abilities to process those reports, to manage the data for those reports, to engineer their approval mechanisms around getting them out to the regulators at the same time. Regulators have changed their gateways, have adjusted the technology they require, introducing things like XBRL and so on that weren't there before. So a humongous amount of change, which has resulted in very, very, not all, but a significant amount of that lift in the business that we have experienced. And as I say, we're pretty core to it.
Yeah, exactly. So explain your part of it now. So where are you in regards to your market position here?
Okay, so yes, we obviously been strong in the area, as I've just mentioned. In the UK, for instance, we have a significant share of banks here in the UK. We have a European platform as well. We have US and we have Asian reporting. So we're significantly represented globally, and that is a very strong base from which to grow. We have a significant amount of excellence in this business space as well. We're recognised as such, as thought leaders, and indeed in respect of the funding that you just mentioned and the finished results now, which are shortly to be announced. So part of the outcome from all of that period as well has been some consolidation in our platform, some improvements in our technology footprint as well, so as to have achieved a number of important roadmap stages, which set us up very well for the future.
Yeah, well, just going by the update, it looks like the business is definitely going in the right direction. And so going
for sure,
forward,
yeah.
You know, into the future, I mean, you know, how do you sort of almost stay one of the thought leaders, the market leaders? How are you set up for the future here?
I think, you know, one of the key things that people sometimes say is, can this change carry on? Surely that's it. Is that not the end of it? And it's not the case. There is ongoing change. And either from an ongoing imposition of adjustments to the global regulatory framework as a consequence of the financial crisis, but more importantly, it's actually going beyond that now. Beyond that, towards improved efficiencies, towards reducing the cost of being regulated within the existing framework. Plus, the framework is, in fact, ongoing, changing it. You're not allowed to say Basel IV nowadays, but there is a, you know, the ongoing rollout of Basel III doesn't come to an end just yet. There are changes yet to come. Additionally, you have, of course, a number of other changes in the market space, which I'll try and summarise these a bit later. But if I mention Brexit, for instance, and other political, geopolitical changes, which do actually have a bearing on this, they adjust the way in which firms are regulated within the UK and how they adjust their European strategy. That's sort of the kind of authorisations they need to have in different places. Plus, you've got a technology change, which is ongoing drive towards cloud, towards digitization. These things around the fintech, regtech world, these are all ongoing changes, which are both a mixture of embracing the the adjustments to changed regulatory requirements, and also the available efficiencies through these technology changes for firms to reduce the cost of being regulated. And change is good. So as far as we're concerned, change is ongoing.
Yeah. And even after yesterday's rise, I see that you're still sort of run about 50 million market cap. And when you take into account, you count what is over 30 of the world's top 50 financial institutions among your clients. You still seem like, you're still a small cap. That's hard to imagine, really, when you have that many big clients and that potential going forward. James, if anyone's missed your story, okay, if anyone's not tuned into Lombard Risk Management, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
I think we've got an ongoing sequence of very clear change drivers which will keep the business moving within our market space. Those are around the move to strategic rather than tactical responses to being regulated, and the authorization changes arising from Brexit that I mentioned, future parts of Basel's roadmap and the whole technology paradigm change. That's the first. There's a whole bunch of changes coming through and they're going to carry on. Second, I would say our competitive excellence. We're still very much in a strong position in the marketplaces, and the fact that we've moved some of our technology forwards now to a point being cloud ready. It's all about straight through processing. It's about workflow driven exception management. And these changes are crucial to the sort of future approach to reducing the cost of being regulated that firms want to do. And the third is our thought leadership and our market space presence. We are very significant in our market space. That isn't something that's going to go away. We're going to build up on that, 30 out of 50 that you mentioned just now, as we go forwards and as firms move towards using better automated tools. So to summarize the summary, lots of drivers still forthcoming. We have an excellent competitive position and we're clear leaders in the space that we're in.
James, good to speak to you, and hopefully speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Justin. Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. Hi, John, how are you? You all right?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. Good morning to you.
Okay, so what are we looking at? What stock is on your radar at the moment, John?
Well, the stock that I love this week, and I think I'll carry on loving this for quite a while, is Bushveld Minerals.
Okay.
Bushveld is run by an amazing team, actually, of guys, a couple of South Africans, backed by a couple of South African professors. So there's a lot of thought and thinking going into this company. They have done what is one of the cleverest deals I've ever seen in my career, probably the cleverest. They've just acquired a vanadium-producing business in South Africa, which is throwing off very large amounts of cash. And having signed that deal some months ago with a Russian group called Evraz, who for various reasons decided to leave South Africa completely, having signed that when the vanadium price was low, now that the vanadium price has virtually doubled, they have constructed a deal where they're buying the business using the cash flows that the business has created over the last few months since the deal was signed. So it is an astonishingly smart deal. Not really surprising. Fortune Mojavello, who runs the business, is an actuarial accountant. He's also worked for McKinsey. So he's a bright, bright boy. And he's leading this company in a number of directions, but the first base is securing, and he's now finished this deal, so he's got the business. We constructed a series of forecasts on the company on what this business would do. We think, in fact, there's every indication that they will exceed our numbers by some margin, and I think that's really good news. Now, on the other side of things, they also acquired recently some tin projects in Namibia. Now, tin is a great metal, and that's fine. And hopefully at some point they will go into tin production. But the crucial thing is, and I think what the market doesn't appreciate yet, is the tin comes with lithium. Now, the market is definitely hot for lithium right now. We don't know how much lithium this is going to come with, but what we know is that Tawana, an Australian company, paid $3 million for some tin tailings, that's old tin material, waste product tin material, for its lithium content. Now, $3 million just for the waste material says to me that actually the primary production, which Bushveld Minerals will hopefully start production of, should contain at least as much lithium, if not more, going forward. So there's two sides to this. You've got great cash flow to come out of the vanadium production unit. And I think it's worth noting that vanadium is a metal that's going into battery storage units. These new vanadium battery storage devices, I think, are going to become very important for grid power in future years. And then on the other side, you've got the tin and lithium. So to me, it's a fantastic group.
Do you know what one of the best qualities you can have as an investor sometimes is patience? And I've got to say, I did some research on this company about 6 months ago. I liked it. I mean, you know, pretty much what you said with the area they're in, vanadium and all this, I was really, and nothing was happening. And this was the end of last year. And all that was happening was that the stock was grinding a bit lower. And I just lost a bit of patience. And I sold out. This was about sub 2 pence. And if you look, in March this year, it literally, like a rocket, has gone from 2 pence pretty much, or around about that level, up to around 9 pence. And it's come back today. It was around about seven and a half pence now. But I completely missed this. And due to my lack of patience, because I liked the story, and I liked, you know, Fortune. Like I said, I watched several interviews with him and stuff, and I thought, this guy, is something about this guy. But again, my patience, you know, lack of patience. And I'm annoyed.
He's switched on. If you're into following, you know, up-and-coming business leaders, I think Fortune, and not forgetting Bill Chapani, who works with him, these are very good guys to follow. They are backed by some very, very smart South African professors who seem to be directing them to acquire the right assets. They've got all the credentials in place that you need for acquiring South African assets. They've bought this vanadium production business, with a mine and processing plant, for an absolute song off the Russians. It was a complicated deal to close. Mm-hmm. As you would expect, because they were effectively using the cash flows of the business they're buying to make the acquisition. Very, very smart deal. I think there was a certain amount of uncertainty until that deal was actually signed. Now that that is done, I see this as a great buying opportunity. So much of the risk is taken away. It looks great.
So even from this level, because like I said, you know, stock prices has rallied strongly from March, where it was about 2.5 pence. Up to now, sort of 7.5 pence, but you still see now potential here, yeah?
Oh, well, this is just the start. I mean, I put a target price on this of 11.6p. That's based on the cash flows, and I discounted my cash flows quite a lot on where I thought on what I could see would be reality. But I thought, let's be cautious here, and you know, discussion with the guys suggests that I really have been very overcautious, and the numbers to come out of the consolidated business would be very, very good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as regards the chart, it's worth, I think we have time to wait, because I think we're in consolidation period here for a minute, because it's risen strongly. So I think a bit of patience, a bit of research is needed here. But yeah, like you said, there's potential there, which is very interesting. Well, and I missed out on my lack of patience.
When you've got a stock that is as strong as this, with such a compelling story, you have to buy it on the dips, and we are in a dip at the moment. None of us ever know how much selling there might be and a certain amount of profit taking, but I think this is as good an opportunity as you'll see for a while.
Yeah. Marvellous. That's BMN is ticker, Bushveld Minerals. John, thanks for that. Speak soon, Pana. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al.
Good morning, Just, from a drought-ridden southeast of England.
Yes. We haven't seen it. It was a little bit of rain the other night, and I thought, is that rain? But yeah. I didn't see the rain. It was one of those days where we went out and the ground was a little bit wet. And I thought, really? It's been raining. So, yeah, we haven't had any rain for a while. But I tell you what, down the south here, I mean, you're there towards Brighton area, I'm towards, you know, Southampton area.
Yeah.
The climate is a lot better than sort of place like Wales. I go back to Wales, I mean, I guess, appearance. I drive over the Severn Bridge and literally starts raining. I thought, what? It's a different climate completely, you know? It's nuts. But we're lucky to nice bit of weather here. And I often watch the national weather forecast, and I'll see sun, and Scotland snowing or rain. And I think, well, they've got a different climate again up there. But we are lucky to have some nice weather down here, I think. You know?
Well, we are, and I live in Seaford, which is between Eastbourne and Brighton. We're on a peninsula here, which is part of Beachy Head and the Seven Sisters, and it's got its own kind of microclimate because we're also behind the Downs. So often we find that if it's cloudy inland, it's really sunny here, but also it's the opposite's true too. So if you get a sunny day inland, then you often get sea mist and stuff rolling in here. So, yeah. But no, the ground is very cracked, it's very dry, so we do need some rain. But it's nice to have this dry weather because you can just get stuff done outside.
Yes, and also that's why you're perennially in matching Bermuda shorts and a Hawaiian top, aren't you, Al?
Well, that's right. I mean, you imagine the picture, stripy shorts, Hawaiian shirts, you know, pina colada on the desk here as we're speaking. I've got my Ray-Bans on and my siesta hat, so, you know, can't be better.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, let's look at the stocks that could be bringing some sunshine into investors' lives. What are you looking at, Al?
Okay, three stocks today. Just want another catch up on two we've discussed before. We discussed Cadence Minerals last week. Now, of course, this is the former Rare Earth Minerals. The epicode is KDNC. Been as high as 0.92p in the year, as low as 0.42p. Currently trading 0.5p. Has a number of rare earth metals projects, lithium projects. The main one, of course, we discussed last week, that was the Sonora lithium project with Cadence's stake in Bacanora Minerals. Mm-hmm. And the stake that the company has there is worth some $50 million US. Now, of course, benchmark event last week, there was an offtake agreement agreed with the Japanese company Hanwha that has annual sales of 1.5 billion yen. I said trillion, I believe, last week, so my apologies for that. But it's a huge agreement. There are only a handful of agreements like this going on around the world, so that really underscored the valuation on their project. Yesterday, Cadence announced that its Sinovec project in Czechoslovakia, also a rare earth project, had been assessed by the operating company there, in which Cadence has a 21% stake. The lithium project there is estimated to have a net present value of $540 million. Mm-hmm. So if you take Cadence's stake there, that basically gives it a value over the lifetime of some $113 million. And that's based on conservative estimates for lithium pricing, as was the Sonora project. So as we go forward with Cadence, we're seeing all of the valuation on its individual assets being underscored and underwritten by these surveys undertaken by the operating companies in the area. So if we look at $50 million for the Sonora project, we've got $113 million for the Sinovec project. Cadence still currently trades on a valuation of some 40 million pounds sterling. So yeah. Clearly what it's doing, it's solidifying the upside case and giving credence to potentially a re-rating for the stock in the near future. But obviously, if you want to listen to that, you can go back and listen to the podcast last week where I went into detail on the stock. I know we're limited on time today, but that's important. So Cadence Minerals, KDNC, you can see that page and information both on Vox Markets and also on the Brand UK website as well.
Yeah, you said credence there, and that made me the Cadence Clearwater, Clearwater Revival. Yes, I don't know why that was. Cool. What else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned and discussed a company called Crawshaw Butchers, epicode yes. CRAW, had a market cap then of about 13 million sterling, this company has a number of butcher shops across the north of England. It was launched in Yorkshire in 1954. All its stores are profitable, and it's aiming for a tenfold increase in its stores in the next 8 to 10 years. There was an issue last year with like-for-like sales, so the share price fell. It has traded as high as 90p on the year, fell as low as 15p. It's recovered to 17p. To today, the stock, since we discussed it, has continued to recover. It's trading at 26.7p. So, in my opinion, this still has an awful long way to go. The like-for-like sales improved over the Christmas period. The company's opening new outlets all the time. So I really think that, you know, there is still a great opportunity here. And clearly, anyone who got in at the 17p last week will be looking at a decent profit already.
Yeah, well, they won't get much sort of custom from me. I, you know, I stopped eating meat the last few weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I won't be busy. It's probably a fad, but, you know, it's for the next couple of weeks or so. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm trying to cut back or so. All right, and third stock, Al, you mentioned.
Okay, the third stock, Just, is a company called Acacia Mining. ACA is the epic code. Now, this is the former African Barrick Gold, so it's probably a lot of people will remember it under that name. Now, my colleague, Dr. David Paul at VectorVest, flagged this stock up this week. The company published full year results at the end of February. The company said it had been a great year, delivered record production. It had reduced its all-in sustaining costs by 14% and doubled its net cash position. And anyone looking to invest in the company, those cost reductions, improvement in net cash position, those are two key factors that you'll want to hear if you're looking at investing in the company. The EBITDA for the group more than doubled to $400 million on the year. Revenues grew by 21%. And the company was so confident, it paid a full year dividend of 10.5 cents, which was more than twice the total dividend announced the previous year. Going forward, it's investing in its exploration portfolio. Going forward, it's set to make set to develop a maiden resource on its West Kenya project. The company also expects further production growth and cost reductions going forward. And basically, from a fundamental position, it's very well placed. Now, the stock has retraced somewhat this week. It's down 4%, probably in line with other dollar earners, given the moves by the PM this week to announce the election and the increased strength in the pound. But from a charting standpoint, Acacia is also appealing as well. David Paul pointed out that the chart has an inverted head and shoulders pattern that's nearing completion. And once it breaks through the neckline, the first technical target is over £7. And of course, currently we're trading here at £4.35. So, The other factor, of course, is that in this time of global macroeconomic uncertainty and all of the issues with various warmongers wanting to press buttons and fire nuclear missiles at each other, gold, of course, is the go-to safe haven asset in these times. So this is a company that's producing gold. It's becoming more and more efficient at doing that. It's set to increase production next year. It's set to reduce costs next year. And it's a number of metrics on the VectorVest analysis portfolio, including growth earnings ratio, progressive dividend policy, and a number of other factors, all point to this stock really looking set to re-rate and to break high once it's broken through the neckline on the chart.
Marvellous. Sounds quite aggressive, that. Breaking through the neckline, doesn't it?
Breaking through the neckline, yeah.
Warmongers. Yeah,
okay. Warmongers, breaking through the necklines for the rest of it. But, Acacia Mining, ACA, there is an article on the VectorVest website. If you go to vectorvest.co.uk/blog, you'll see it there, and it's self-explanatory. It's very well explained there.
Marvellous. Al, cheers for that. Have a nice weekend. I know it's only a Thursday, but it almost seems like, I don't know why, because it's a short week this week. It seems like a Friday to me.
It's sort of that holiday spirit, really, isn't it? We're sort of in Easter holiday mode, still short week. So yeah, I think we're wishing the week away. But, of course, it's the full five-day job next week.
Yeah, and also, Al, when it's you're living in a microclimate, wearing Bermuda shorts and a matching Hawaiian top, drinking pina coladas, it's always holiday time, isn't it?
You know? Hey, every day's a holiday on the South Coast, just particularly on the South Coast Riviera, that is Seaford.
Lovely. Al, speak next week, fella. Cheers.
Cheers, Jas. All the best. Bye for now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are, at five, pretty much always there, Ascent Resources, AST. At four, no surprise, And you should put this company on your watch list. A very interesting part of their journey right now. They've got a very positive data readout from Iclaprim, their lead drug in the phase 3 trial. Of course, it's Motif Bio. I talked to Graham earlier on, MTFB. They're doing a second phase 3, which is exactly the same, apart from the geography's different, patients. But, you know, the data readout will pretty much be the same here. And this could be a blockbuster drug. So a very interesting part in the history. And so worth keeping a watch out on Motif Bio. At 3, it's Infinity Energy, INFT. At 2, Visarian, VRS. Listen, if you've heard about graphene, like I said, all pretty much the experts are saying this is a game changer in so many sectors around the world. It's one of those things you've just got to keep an eye on. You know, it's graphene. It's amazing. It could transform so many different businesses over the next few years. And Visarian there, at the centre in this country, I think, of graphene development, with partnerships with Manchester University, who, you know, pretty much invented graphene, and Cambridge University, who are at the cutting edge of printing, graphene, and, you know, development of graphene, then it's worth putting Visarian on your watch list. VRS, ticker. Honestly, do some reading up on it. And Nicola covered them in the charts this morning, on this morning podcast, and she said, we could have a bit of a pullback here, so maybe opportunity while you're doing research, you know, to look at the chart as well. And number one, most liked, or most followed, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is URU Metals. That's URU ticker, very highly followed company. And, of course, in the shadow of John Zorbas there, who's the man that a lot of people see delivering a lot of value here to shareholders. Okay, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were: at 5, Clough Natural Resources, CLNR, robust scoping study results for North Sea assets. At 4, Regency Mines, RGM, coal update. Sounds quite boring, that, really, coal, but people liked it. Obviously something exciting there, coal update. I just think they're going to spruce that up a bit, you know? Just an update on coal. It doesn't sound too exciting, but people liked it. That's the main thing. Obviously, the substance of that RNS was a lot more interesting than the title of the RNS. At 3, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AAOG, contract for workover mechanical unit, was third most liked. And at 2, URU Metals, exercise of options. And number 1, this is the last 24 hours, released late yesterday, URU Metals, grant of options and update on a magnetite test work. Most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatus.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.